currently editing Chris's one shot, which is a lot of fun.
Okay, I need to remember to let Roland play press now.
Oh yeah, so if you got a book or something, like AJ keeps saying one shot from the book, what is this?
Yeah, I left it downstairs from when AJ and Chan were around. It's a company that produces like materials for DMs and stuff. So I think I did have another book of theirs that was like a smaller one that you could kind of use on the fly. Had like random rolling tables for stuff with like random names and like random NPC creators and stuff like that. But this one is just like full of like random one shot like scenarios and stories. So I think it was like one day when I had like a couple of days notice before running a one shot, I was like, I've seen much bigger actual play shows like doing adverts for this company and for this book. I'm going to ask them if they wouldn't mind me using it in our podcast, just because it's like, it's not like public domain or anything like that. And it's always good to check these things. And they were like, yeah, sure, use it. Let us know when you release the episode. We'll listen to it.
Nice.
Which was really nice. And they got back to me really quickly as well. It wasn't like, you know, like I said, I only had like a couple of days notice before running the episode. So it made things easier.
They know our sense of humor, right? Like, it is pure filth.
I've told them that we have been described as the I'm trying to think of something highbrow, the Shakespeare of actual plays, and they were like, "Oh, good, because that's the only thing that's good enough for us." And I was like, "Well, hold on to your tits, sugar, because you're about to lose your tits."
Wow, are you a wordsmith or what?
Yeah, I'm off the clock.
Off the clock. I only say this because I've edited it, or editing, I've nearly done it. And the moment it gets mentioned as a book, it's called One Shot Wonders, and one of you two says, much like AJ's sex life.
Yeah, so my email to them where I'm like, hey, just to let you know, that thing that I asked you about a few weeks ago, the episode is soon gonna, it's gonna be airing on Tuesday. I'll be laid in bed at like 6:30 on Tuesday morning, just with my phone resting on my chest, just like rocking back and forth, waiting for the calls to come in.
You'll have to give us a YouTube video.
They might have something on YouTube. I've seen more stuff on like Instagram ads.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that they're gonna have those interviews where there's gonna be lights flashing, and they're gonna like, I'm so sorry. We will not work with these people again. We did not vet them appropriately. we have put top men on this.
They have to give a fucking press conference. And they're just like, yeah. So, Adventurers Anonymous did reach out to us about running a one-shot using material from our book. One of our community managers did respond to them and did give them permission. That person has now been fired and forced into a small box and ejected into space. At this time, we are going to be cutting all ties with Adventurers Anonymous. None of the things that they did in that one shot are representative of the One Shot Wonders brand, and the things that, in particular, AJ Jackson did to that baby, we just on a personal level, we find it disgusting.
We'll be making a donation to baby's yoga.
I know exactly what Matt's gonna say there as well.
Oh, sorry, go, Matt.
Many of my best friends are from the minority that was offended, so
many of my friends are from insert culture here.
Finland. It feels like they've paid you to draft their press release, Chris.
No, it was Raggy's idea. Now I've got this idea of like a press conference in my head where they're like,
I'm so lucky for having such a supportive wife to help me through this tough time.
it's just like the wife and kids crying.
Before we kick this episode off, would you just like to record us a disclaimer, Chris? Just for anyone, you know, that we can bolt onto the front of this episode. Just, you know, in case we offend anyone at any time.
I'm just going to get a beer while a disclaimer's being
written. Or just like a general purpose disclaimer, just nothing specific.
We're sorry.
I love the hands together thing as well. It's very like, thoughts and prayers. Okay, give me a sec.
Mm-hmm. Method.
You can do this, Chris. You can do this. You've been training for this for all of 10 seconds. Count me in.
5, 4.
Hey there, adventurers. How we doing? We doing good? Look, we're going to be getting right into the action very, very soon with the rest of the crunk fuckers. You know, it's the gang that you know and love. Just between you and me, just a quick sidebar between you and me. Things in this episode get just a little bit spicy. I would advise you to listen with not only your ears and your brains, which are connected to your ears, but also your heart, because we're just people. Just like you. And if there's a particular group of people that this episode offends, particular group or a particular slice of society that this group offends, we would like to say we're so sorry. And thanks for listening. To be brutally honest, thank you for taking the time out to listen. I'll leave it there for you, folks. We're gonna get back into the action. Take it easy, and take it sleazy. Chris, out.
I'm gonna have to do something really offensive now to make that worth it.
It's kind of like a Chekhov's gun situation now. Chekhov's apology, but what's he apologizing for?
Yeah, we're gonna find out.
I feel a personal responsibility to make this maybe more heinous than anything we've ever done before.
Really?
And I don't even know what the plan is for this episode.
Of course you don't. That would be no fun if you did. That fills me with dread, Mr. Neil. That really does, to know that you're going to out-sleaze yourself.
Out-seize?
Sleaze. You don't seize yourself on webcam. That's disgusting.
Sounded like seize.
Yeah, there's so much audio cut from these episodes of me just having epileptic seizures and AJ just being like, get back to the mic. Get back to the mic. Content.
Apologies to anyone who suffers from.
I'm allowed to say that. My dad's epileptic, all right? My dad's epileptic. I can say what I want.
He knows one of them.
Some of his closest family members are epileptic.
Some of my closest family members.
Dear God.
I told you we'd say something bad. We just didn't think that it would be before we even got to the recap.
Are you all sitting comfortably? Well, hey there, fellow nerds and ne'er-do-wells. I'm AJ, and welcome to the Adventurers Anonymous podcast, the home of fantasy fucknuggetry. Come join us week by week as a rotating cast of geeks sip cocktails, play Dungeons & Dragons, and dance around the boundaries of common decency. Now then, joining me this week are three colleagues who are chomping at the bit to get going. First up, coming to you from the city of Sheffield, we have a man who many see as the voice piece for the woking man. It's Mr. Chris Neil. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Fresh off the apology tour. It's just always going six days a week. On the seventh day, we record the podcast. On the other 6 days, we got to be doing the rounds, just apologizing to everybody. But I'm good. I'm excited to do some dice rolling, do more things to apologize for.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here to stay humble and stay sleazy as always.
I love that. That's probably going to be on a t-shirt soon. Stay humble, stay sleazy. All right. Next up, coming to you from the mystical land of Finland, we have the sexiest croc on the block. It's Mr. Matt Durant. How you doing?
Kavite.
Not this again. Is this your bid to teach me Finnish? What does that mean?
It means welcome in the Kavie language, spoken in Togo, Benin, and Ghana.
Which are principalities of Finland?
Parts of Finland. Yeah, let's say they're in Finland.
That's probably a terrible comment that will get cut out of the final edit, listeners. But did you just spin the language wheel this week? Or are you a polyglot?
Pretty much. No, I'm just looking at a webpage that tells me some useful phrases in Kabye. Hmm. Hi to any Kabye speakers.
Say that again. Kabye.
I can also say Nana Wisi. Good afternoon.
Amazing. For those of you listening to us after midday. Well, there you go. Every day's a school day, listeners. And finally, he's fresh from the pit. It's Mr. Chris Ragg. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. It's tough in the pit, but I'm all right.
Just out of interest, what were you doing in the pit?
It's been closed for a long time.
Playing that game where you like flick a 5k at the wall and someone else does it, and whoever gets it closest keeps all the 5k's.
Wow. And then your mum called you home for dinner. Right. Who would like a recap?
Give it to me, Daddy.
Please. Dungeon Daddy.
Oh, I hate it when you do that. I'm taking your apology. That fucking apology at the beginning was for me, wasn't it? Don't call me Dungeon Daddy. It's just creepy.
Give it to me, Dungeon Mommy.
Yeah, I pretty relate to that more. Right. Last we left off with our adventurers. Well, they'd had a bit of a torrid time of it. They were shacked up in the Busty Barnacle Inn, having just discovered mere minutes before that they were wanted. Tatty Bojangles having found a wanted poster pinned to the notice board in the ale room of the Busty Barnacle. Oberon offering 10,000 gold piece reward for the crunk fuckers. Now, they decided to just stand around chatting to themselves, one by one, waiting until the elves caught up with them. And catch up with them they did. The elves storming their room in the inn. Three elves descended upon their room, and naturally the crunk fuckers dispatched the three elves, not before blowing a hole in the wall with a fireball. Having dispatched the three elves, Tatty Bojangles used his boots of spider climbing to climb out of the window, down the wall, and hijacked a hearse. And that's where we're going to pick up with this week's episode. But listeners, before we do, it is worth noting, not mere minutes before the elves descended upon them, Tatty broke the news to the adventuring party that they had been carrying around a wondrous item with them for months. They had in fact been in possession of the Ring of Three Wishes, which caused a bit of hullabaloo.
I don't think it was months, right? I thought it was one thing that we got from the dragon horde.
I mean, if that's what you want to focus on, you've been carrying around the Ring of Three Wishes. Weeks, months, hours. You've got power. How will you wield it?
Just feel like a long time ago since we saw that dragon, and it was literally what, like 5 days ago in game time.
Yeah, it wasn't long.
It probably wouldn't be that long.
It's been a lifetime.
Yeah,
I mean, Tatty literally died.
True. So we pick up back with the episode. The adventuring party are in the third floor of the Busty Barnacle, up in their room. It's smoky, ash-ridden, there are three dead elves out in the corridor, which Hanash pummeled to death almost single-handedly with a bit of help from his friends. And Tatty is currently sitting on the headboard of a hearse with a horse out the front, and Tatty even stole the top hat of the funeral director.
PB and Jelly, erstwhile assistants.
Yes.
Because I think the word erstwhile means like, just like good assistance, or, but it doesn't mean that, but I still always say the word erstwhile when it's not applicable. I dropped out of English.
to use it at work a lot.
Yeah, maybe I should get more used to it.
Your two lackeys are called Jeff and Pete.
Jeff and Pete.
Bogdanov. And you've been paying them. They are with you. So you have a decision to make now, whether to keep them in your employment or cut them loose.
Still being daytime, I'm going to climb into my coffin and I'm going to say, take me to hearse, and point out the window.
Mm-hmm. Hanash, what are you doing at this point? As you look down, you just see Tati hollering up at you.
I'm going to take the bedsheet off and I'm going to put it over me and pretend I'm a ghost.
Are you going out the window or are you going down the stairs?
So I'm going down the stairs. So I probably won't put the duvet on or whatever until I get to the door. And then when I get to the door, I'll put it on.
Seems legit.
I'll say goodbye to the bartender on my way.
Yeah. I was going to say, just as a little montage, Tati, you're tapping your foot on the board of the carriage as you're waiting, just tensely looking around, looking at all the citizens who were flowing through the street, just eyeing them up for potential elves, just waiting patiently for your friends. Back in the Busty Barnacle Inn, the pounding of feet coming together as everybody grabs their possessions, slings them into their packs and puts them on their shoulders, looking around one last time to make sure you've picked up all of your individual familiars, including Barbara, who's coming with you because she can't climb out of a window. You look back at the wreckage where the door once was, the giant 10-foot crater blasted through the wall of the inn. Hanash, you look down with a giggle one last time at the crushed and smashed forms of the elves, one of which is head you staved in with your foot into the floorboards, as you charge downstairs. Civic Cloaca looking up from the glass that he's polishing, as first runs a goblin, then runs a tiefling, then runs a semi-dressed human priest, just holding a towel around himself. Then the weirdest thing happens. A giant form in a stained white linen cloak just charges past. And then for the third time in the last 24 hours, he watches two men carry a coffin past him. Back out.
Can I throw some money at him as I, like, go past? And like, oh, thank you for our stay.
Oh.
He thinks it's the ghost of Theobald. The dead familiar.
I'm eternal.
How much are you giving him?
Like 100 gold.
Whoa.
It's pretty good.
It's like a whole bag.
I've got so much gold.
Just like this guy in a sheet, just like shakes a little bit and the money falls out.
Yeah, I leave like a money snail trail.
Amazing. As you charge out of the inn, just pausing to slam down a fistful of gold pieces onto the counter, Civic Cloaca, who is the Arakokran landlord of the inn, who's a burly, white-feathered individual, just looks in some surprise as he watches the coffin charge past him one last time. As he looks down at the pile of money, looks back up as the door as it slams shut, watching the white bedspreaded ghost charge past him, he's like, well, that ought to cover it. I suppose that will also cover stolen bedware. It's been a pleasure knowing you. As you make your way out, all of you gathering round the back of the hearse, you see Tati has managed to procure a rather impressive top hat, which is, let's just say, far too big for him, but he's wearing it with pride. You look at the back, you see that there's a coffin in the back of the hearse, Hanash. And you look at the coffin, it's got flowers arranged on the top and they say, in loving memory of Alexa.
So there's two coffins, just to be clear.
As these guys come to the hearse, I'm going to point at the coffin and be like, I got you something special, Hanash. You know the pet name that I love to refer to you by all the time. This is for you, Alexa.
Oh, you and I open it up and I look in and I see Alexa there. I'm like, whatever. And then I pick Alexa up and throw out the cat and get into the coffin and close the lid and
just Once the coffins are loaded in with the appropriate vampires in the appropriate coffins and the appropriate corpse left behind, Aristobulus, Maud, all the familiars, once everyone's in the hearse, I'm going to take us out of town, heading for the Sirius Mountains?
That's quite right. Well remembered. Just a few things that I just need to know as a DM, just for my own mental images. Who's on top and who's on bottom of this coffin sandwich? Is Belsier on top or is Hanash on top? Because they're not side by side.
Well, I think,
yeah,
my coffin being flimsier as I wait for my proper coffin to be made, I think I better go on top with Hanash underneath me.
Congratulations to anyone who just joined the podcast for those words.
Because Hanash being kind of stronger and harder will be better on the bottom, whereas Belsiar being softer and
more flaccid. More of a bottom.
More flaccid in terms of the wood.
Hanash just happy to be a power bottom in this case.
If he didn't say it, I was gonna. And if I didn't say it, the fans would be screaming it.
A rock hard power.
Yeah. It's just there's so much to unpack from all of those sentences.
So, just as a bit of a mental image then, Tati, you look back, you're tapping your foot, wanting to go, looking around, you see the crowd are going wild, Hanash ripping up the lid of the coffin, just scooping up, you see a lady all dressed in black with pearls around her neck and a veil over her face, who's obviously Alexa. You scoop her up and you just dump her in the gutter, face down, as there's a sudden intake of air from the crowd around you, as everyone starts stepping back. You see a small child start crying, looking down as you just flip off the child, climb into Alexa's coffin, and Pete and Jeff nail the lid on for you, putting Hanash's coffin on top. Tati.
Hanash's is going on the bottom. Remember, he's a power bottom.
Apologies, I managed to mix up the characters in a podcast I've been doing for 3 years.
You can't be a power top. That's not a thing.
Sorry. Hanash being the power bottom, Belsiar being the slender top of this coffin duo. Tati, as you look back, you see in all the excitement, they've smeared the flower arrangement so that it no longer says in loving memory of Alexa. It now says, I'm loving Alexa, as some of the flowers have just been smudged and pushed around. As you look back at Alexa, face down in the gutter, as you gee on the horses, Pete and Jeff just holding onto the footboard at the back of the hearse as you slowly grind your way along the cobbles.
I'm picturing like one of those just married cars, but instead of the cans hanging off the back, it's just two men hanging on going...
It's just stern and expressionless.
Love that. I was kind of imagining the classic bin lorry where people used to hang on the back of the bin lorry.
Yeah, it's a living.
Is that a quote from one of your many TV series? Is that like
it's the original TV series?
I don't know what it's a quote from.
This is the Flintstones.
Oh, is it?
Is it?
Right? Although Flintstones probably got it from something else. You'd always have like a fish that's...
Finding Nemo?
No, that's a bad example.
Yes, AJ. The fish in the Flintstones.
What's the fish? There's no fucking fish.
From the Flintstones.
Ah, dear Lord.
They'd have like a mouse that sorts out different post and it would look at the camera and be like, it's a living.
How much crystal meth did you do whilst watching the Flintstones?
It would get squashed by like all the posts because it's tiny, because it's a mouse, and then it would like get up and dust itself off and like gym the camera and be like, it's a living.
Alright, at this point, listeners, if you've ever heard of this, please write in, because I'm drawing a blank there. Alright, that was a narrative detour.
Yeah, we'll wait. We'll wait.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Do you like stories with world building?
We're in the Bermuda Triangle.
Comedy?
It was a rough birthday for Scrawhan.
Oh no, his birthday!
Drama?
You need to ask my brother to leave. He is not here to be productive.
Oh, you don't have to ask me to leave.
Heartbreak?
What are you talking about? I'm gay!
I thought so too!
Wonderful, a somewhat D&D podcast every other Wednesday, wherever you get podcasts.
It's canon!
Rip in peace, Himroid.
Let's pick back up with the storyline. As your hearse pulls away down the street in the last rays of the day, it's heading in towards early evening. As slow at first, you are massively overloaded. This hearse was not intended to carry this many individuals and animals. You are now pulling away down the cobbled street, leaving around the crowd who are gathering around the prone form of the lady who you knew for mere minutes, Alexa. Her cold dead body lying face down in the gutter as you pull away.
And we just pull away.
Wow. That didn't feel deserved.
We never knew her. She was literally dead when we got here.
So respectful, listeners. So respectful. So as you pull round the side streets, looking one last time at the Busty Barnacle Inn from the back now, you look back at it, still seeing smoke billowing out of an upstairs window. You pull away down the cobbled street, heading towards the Quayside Plaza, just in front of you, where people are milling around.
Hunash starts crying because we didn't get to burn down anywhere. He's really sad. It's the first time we've left a city without burning a building down. And this doesn't feel right.
Hunash, trapped in his coffin, can't see what's going on, but knows instinctually he didn't get to do what he wanted to do.
Belciar, make me a perception check.
Did we knock over a candle when we left?
Can I make it with no dice? Because I'm inside a coffin. Oh, natural 20.
Nice.
Natural 20! Even as you're bounced up and down inside your flimsy coffin, Belciar, you hear below you the gentle sobbing of your friend through 2 inches of wood. You can hear the slow tears of your friend. Of course, being a vampire as well, you're aware that Hanash is merely crying dust. Much like the rest of him, he has no fluid left in him. Just little motes of dust are poofing out of his tear ducts as sadness washes over your green friend.
I know the D&D universe doesn't have the Force, but can I reach out with the Force to calm his emotions?
I mean, you're not really in touch with any deities, are you? You're not particularly a spiritual man, Belciar?
No, I guess not.
Why don't you just talk to him? Just open up. Maybe all Hanash needs is some intimacy.
Can I do something that will cheer Hanash up? Because it's what he would do in this situation. Can I cast Stinking Cloud on his coffin? As a joke to make him laugh.
Sure. Can we just check the spell components on that? Is that a visual?
It's just within a point within range. So okay.
As long as you don't have to see it. It hasn't got a visual component on it.
I do technically need a rotten egg, but...
We're going to assume that you always have one of those. Yeah.
Like, what's the radius? Is it going to be pressurized in my coffin?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Well, it's 20 feet.
You've just put 20 feet worth of gas into a...
Confined her.
into a tiny coffin.
6x2 coffin.
As you just hear Hanash getting the bends underneath you, pressurized coffin.
There's no more oxygen. I don't need oxygen, actually. Fuck it.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, neither of us actually need to breathe, but I assume we can still smell it.
Yeah. I smell it, I go, oh, and then I laugh hysterically.
Absolutely. As you can just hear, your coffin, it's expanding. The wood, you can hear the hinges just creaking as 20 feet worth of gas just compressed into about 6 foot worth of coffin. It's at this point, Tati, make me a perception check.
21.
My God, you're perceptive. You are very gently pushing the horse, the horses, there's two horses at the front of this hearse, through the crowd of people. You're being gentle with it. You've got intent. You're trying to get somewhere. You need to get out the east side of the city as you're gently guiding the horses across the cobbled plaza on the quayside of Nicodranus. You're watching the people around as you see various carts coming and going with different traders. As you see coming towards you an individual on a horse with a black cloak, blonde hair, as you get nearer and nearer, you see it's an elf. As you're trying to play it cool, ugh, you're about to pass each other.
Okay. I'll just like cast my eyes down a little bit with my hat over my head.
Okay. Make me a stealth check.
27.
Oof. Nice. As you keep your head down and the cloaked horseman goes the other way, you don't even look, you just see him passing you. As you carry on through the plaza and onto the main street, heading out east of the city. As you carry on, evening setting on and the sun starting to dip, you pass various shops. Some of them are familiar to you. You pass the restaurant, Spread and Dip, by renowned celebrity chef Ruben Guavez, where you were invited for dinner that evening with Took to talk about the tiki bar. You also pass various shops. You pass Twank's Weapon Emporium that you'd been to. As you start heading out towards the city, you see the city's Wayne Gate in front of you, which is a large stone gate through which all traffic comes and goes through the east side of the city. And you see where there are also town guard, there are also elves standing in watch and wait.
Oh, fantastic. Is there like a queue of carts and stuff trying to get in and out?
There's two carts in front of you. One's being checked over. The other's queued up. You've got maybe 50 meters until you get there.
What, until we get to where the guards and the elves are, or like until we get to the back of the queue, or like behind the one that's already there? Okay.
Yes, that's the image.
Okay.
It's a street as well, so you've got carts coming the other way. Let's say people drive on the left in this fantasy universe, because hey, we're in England.
Let's say.
So you've got people coming across your right heading against you, and you're heading on the left-hand side of the road, two carts in front of you, 50 meters ahead. First cart being checked off by city guard as elves watch on.
Okay.
As you watch, the first cart goes through.
I'll pull up to the checkpoint calmly and just tip my hat to whoever's there.
Mm-hmm. As you see the first cart goes through and just trundles off slowly, you see the cart in front is a farmer laden down with produce. You see in the back of his cart, he's a beet farmer. You see lots of beets piled up in the back of his cart as he's got a straw hat on. He's even got the archetypal piece of straw in his mouth. He looks like a... I'm not sure you can use the word hick anymore, but he looks a bit like a country bumpkin.
Hey, country bumpkin is better than hick. We already put the apology up at the top of the episode, so if anyone's offended...
It's true.
These hicks probably don't even have phones, so it's fine.
It's true. If you are indeed in a demographic that feels the need to put straw in your mouth to relax, we are very sorry. Yeah, you see the country bumpkin in front of you with the straw hat and a cart full of beets pulls up, gets the once over from the city watch. As the elves watch on, you see two elves just with a keen eye, just leaning up against the wall with their black capes. You see one of the city watch go around the back and just take out a sword and just root around in the beats a little bit. Nothing doing. So just nods as the guard at the front of the gate tells the farmer to carry on. As you just see, he nods his straw hat and just trundles along, leaving a gap in front of you.
I know that you said the guards, like the city guards, are kind of like physically coming up to the carts and like checking stuff. Are the elves doing that as well? Or are they just like stood back, like observing?
Stood back. 1 6 foot off on the left, 1 6 foot off on the right.
Okay. Yeah. We'll pull up to the space left by that cart. And I assume they'd tell us to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's just everybody stopped. Yeah, we'll just stop.
Yeah, as you stop in good course, you see the man telling you, he's like giving you the international sign for come on, come on, come on, and then holds his hand up to stop. As you stop the horse, you see two city watch, one standing in front of you, blocking your way as one walks round the side of the cart, peers through the glass. The hearse has glass at the back. As he sees two coffins stacked on top of each other, he sees a wolf and two men hanging off the back, scratches his head a little bit as he walks back up to you and says, "All right, what we got going on?"
"Good evening. How's your night going?"
"Well, early evening. Just got on shift. Gonna be a long one. On the graveyard."
"My condolences, friend. I've got a couple of bodies to transport through the Wiring Gorge up to Trostenwald."
"That's good." "I think it's my..."
He doesn't hear the coffin talking to itself.
I'm trying like not to like cough from all like the stinking gas.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's holding his nose, but he just perceives that it's decomposing body as he looks you straight in the eye, Tatty, looking up at your top hat and back down at you. He says, "So, what's the story with all these people then?"
Is he like gesturing at the other people that are in the...
Yes, you've got a lot of people hanging off this hearse.
Yeah, I didn't know if he was talking about the dead people that I've referred to or the people that are living. I'm going to gesture to Aristobulus and Maud and Barbara. "I hired those two to protect the carriage." And then I'm going to gesture to PB and Jelly, and I'm just going to be like, "Those two, they just wanted a lift out of town. I told them that there wasn't room, but they could grab on if they wanted to."
They're just lying on the road and like give a thumbs up.
Just like, "All right."
First of all, make me a deception check, please, Tatty.
I thought you were just going to say mourners.
Yeah, they don't understand how funerals work. I got a 13.
Oh, 13. As he looks, he's been doing this for some years, you can tell. He's not overly enthusiastic about his job, but it pays the bills. As he thinks about it, he looks back, there's a bit of a queue behind you, and he sort of like shrugs his shoulders a bit. He's like, "All right, I suppose. You got the papers then? Got the death certificates?"
No, they're at the funeral home in town. Did I ever find out what the name of the funeral home was? Did Belsair ever mention it?
Yes. Hang on.
I can assure you I did not remember it.
I don't know. Need to roll a history check because it would be zero.
Perfect opportunity to the "I've got them right here, stab, stab." "I've got them right here in my bag of knives."
Yeah, I'm just like, I'm holding my gun underneath my cloak. I'm just like, "I got your papers right here, bitch."
Make me a pure wisdom check, Mr. Neil.
Wisdom check. Hooray. I can feel it. I can feel the bad rolls now. Yeah, that's a bad roll. That's a six.
A six. I thought you were just rolling ones or twenties.
I'm confused.
Oh, turns out I roll fours now as well.
You remember Belcia telling you all about it, and you remember it began with G, and it's almost on the tip of your tongue.
Garibaldi banditos?
Probably. Probably.
Yeah. As the guard's like, oh, I smell a rat. Garibaldi bandito. My wife loves that fucking thrift store. Yeah, you're going to have to step off the carriage, my friend.
Is he like lower down than me because I'm sat up on the thing? Is there anyone directly in front of us?
Yeah, about 10 feet in front of the horses, yeah. Just a person.
What, a guard? All right, their life is forfeit. I'm just gonna sigh and be like, sorry, bud. I got places to be, and I'm gonna yeah.
Love that.
And try and get the horse to just charge off.
Got you. Make me an animal handling check, please.
And I asked, like, what time has the sun gone down yet? We were in golden hour, weren't we? Like, before we were like an hour before.
Done. Yeah. Shortly, you will be just fine.
Okay.
At this point, you might be getting a little bit crispy if you get out. I imagine one of you.
That's a great.
I'd say narratively, while Chris is making this roll, one of you, Belcia, on top, you just creep open the door of your coffin, poke your finger out as it comes back, sore and red. You look at it like a sundial. You're like, early evening.
It's like a perfect line from where he has his finger out of the coffin. Just like, maybe not. It's like a dipstick.
The oil gauge on your car.
Yeah.
8 o'clock.
I got a dirty 20.
Dirty 20. Well done, you. I'm always very careful not to say whipping horses because I think it sounds very, very bad and I think it plays badly. So spurring on your horses, however you want to do that. Kia! As you...
Encouraging. Yeah, kind words.
Just whispering sweet nothings into your horse's ears. They spur on.
Go, Seabiscuit. Go. Into the night.
Go, Seabiscuit. As the horses on a dirty 20 burst off. Now, it isn't the fastest vehicle, but no man alive is messing around with two giant horses pushing down on them. As the guard standing in front of you makes a dexterity saving throw, just diving out of the way, taking a horse to the shoulder, he's smashed onto the cobbles. You plow through the gap of the gate, heading out of the city. As you spin around and look out the back, you see the two elves are standing in the gateway, watching you as you go off. They look at each other and they just head off back into the city as you trundle away, leaving the city behind. You look back, you see the giant stone walls of Nicodranas as you make your way down the country road, heading east out of the city. You see other carriages, both domestic and commercial, coming into the city. And you see off to the left, the coastline. You see the twinkling of the sea and the sun as it's setting. As you're now heading out of the city, having made a big noise on your way out, but managing to keep everyone on the horse.
Did you say we were going east out of the city?
So Sirios Mountains are just northeast.
To the north, right?
Yeah.
Cool. I assume that at this point, like, we're still staying on the quote-unquote road.
Yeah.
And that's probably the best way. I will probably, once we get a bit further away from Nicodranas, try and figure out the best way to get to...
Just while you're thinking about that, I'm just going to give you a bit of context. The roads are well looked after, they're well maintained on the way out of Nicodranas. Whatever taxation the council puts upon the citizens of Nicodranas affords them a decent road system, and it is a well cobbled road with drainage and ditches on either side. And you can see that's all part of what brings so much commerce to the city. It's a well looked after road that heads out. It's been cleared of any kind of foliage near the edges as you're near the city, so that bandits can't hide in bushes and trees. And you see that there's a drainage ditch down either side of this well-maintained road. Almost civilized for now. You don't imagine it'll stay that way as you get further away from the city.
Is this the road where it all began?
No.
I'm thinking of somewhere else. I'm sure we came down a road.
That was going into Port de Mali.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, I shake off the feelings of nostalgia.
Just another road, Belsia.
Make me a constitution saving throw.
So we're heading for Snig Thickets, which is, as far as I remember, it's at the base of the Sirios Mountains. I'm trying to think, like, using a map, what would be the best way to get there? Do I know if we'd have to go through the Wyun Gates and the Wyun Gorge? That feels like it would be going too far north, potentially. Oh, we might just be able to turn north, like, pretty soon.
Just having a look. Talk amongst yourselves.
I can't believe that other sports team came back in such a strong manner.
I can't believe that sports personality made those comments on that social media platform.
It was very uncouth.
You guys have never sounded more upper class, even before Raggy said uncouth. I can't believe he said those things. Yes, quite.
Good job his pop star partner came out and told the truth.
Yes. Yeah. We finally know what really happened in the thing that happened.
Classic. What's the conspiracy group in America with like the triangle and the eye?
Illuminati.
Illuminati. We finally know it was them this entire time.
Yeah.
Classic Illuminati shit.
Yeah. Always them.
Okay. Sorry. Apologies about that. Yes, Chris. You travelled extensively around this area. You don't necessarily need to go through the Wyun Gorge. There are other ways up. You're going to have to go up into the mountains at some point. The Wyun Gorge, joining the Wyun Gate, would go round the Sirios Mountains to the east. So possibly you could head in that direction and come off before the gorge.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I think we're basically just going to follow this road until we get to like where we can see the base of the mountains and then head further north there, because I don't really know where Snig Thickets is. So yeah, we'll just head for the mountains that way.
Okay. They're not hard to find. They are on the horizon at all times and are fairly dominating of the skyline. Yeah. As you trundle off away from Nicodranas with many a thought about all the opportunities that you missed in the city, as you had to make a hasty exit. Before you know it, Tati, evening is upon you. The sun has gone down and a coldness and a darkness gathers in as you head towards night. It's about 9 o'clock-ish as you're still on the headboard. Trundling along, you see the quality of road as you get further away from Nicodranas diminishes considerably and has less stone and is more compacted earth and dirt.
If I'm looking at a map, I'll probably like look out for the small, what looks like a little forest, like right at the base of the mountains. I'll probably look out for that as like a place where to like turn in and start heading north, especially to get us off the main road, really. I'll let Barbara, like, just if she wants to, I'll let her like run alongside the carriage. Just make sure she's happy, really. I'm just keeping everyone happy.
Amazing. Yeah, you leave Barbara to just run off. You see her charge off into the woods every so often. On the edge, you know, there's a wood line about 50 meters back from the road, and you see her like charge off every so often and chase down something that you can barely make out in the dark. And at one point she comes back holding a pheasant in her jaw and just jogs alongside the cart. Now, Hanash and Belsier, at this point it is perfectly safe for you to come out of your coffin. Maud just knocks on the lid. Belsier.
Come on, let me out of this dang coffin.
Oh yeah, you can't get out till I get out. I rise bolt upright in the classic vampire manner.
Smashing your head off the roof of the hearse.
Yeah.
It's not really designed for two. Both of you, I presume, are leaving your coffins and coming out into the cold, moonlit night.
I do the reverse of Belsier, and I just put my legs straight up and then like go into a handstand and then do a flip. I can roll an acrobatics check if you would like.
I mean, sure, if you...
I would like...
It's a tiny, compacted space. Now, most of the party are just sitting on the roof. There's two, like, metal bars running down either side of the roof of the hearse with people just now sitting on them now with their feet dangling over the edges. Hanash, feel free to make us an acrobatics check.
22.
This is going to be... I was just about to say, this is going to be really good. I can feel it.
Like a flea in a matchbox. You are bouncing around inside the hearse, just smashing off the walls as you come on a gymnastic landing, sticking your head out into the night air. You sit on the back in between Pete and Jeff Bogdanov. They've barely had a chance to say hello to you yet. You look up at the moon. It's a beautiful crescent moon tonight, sitting proud in the sky, staring back down at you.
Who made a stink? Who did it? Who made a stink?
I give Barbara some side eye.
That voice got me so much. Who did? Who did stink?
Maybe that accent was what the apology was for at the beginning of this episode.
Could be, yeah.
I stand by it.
Hmm. There's still time to apologise. Offence might not have happened yet. Yeah, Tati, you can see Barbara is just running along down by you with a dead pheasant in her mouth, looking up at you as if to bring a gift, except the cart never stops, so she never stops. Paquito is riding on her back.
Seems legit. Yeah. They'll let that happen until it becomes a problem.
What? They're not bedfellows? Jesus Christ. She's got some standards.
No, but you might stab her or something.
Okay, it's true.
He is quite stabby.
He is. Belsier, you hear a rustling in your pocket as you look down and you see a black beak sticking out of your coat pocket as a crow looks up at you.
Pull him out and I say... How you doing, little buddy? It's once again the sun's diurnal reign of terror falls to the wayside and our nocturnal oasis.
This is how Matt's going to wake up his future child.
Once again, the moon has overcome the sun in its eternal struggle.
And the sun rises, my son!
You pick up the crow out of your pocket with your crocodilian claws as an array of feathers just flutter away as you see your crow is a little bit worse for wear and molting as his wings are somewhat patchy as he looks at you with sad eyes and says, "Oh, father, you do abuse me. You have kept me in that pocket."
Are you happy, Cato?
No. I am a bird of the air, and you keep me in your pocket with two filthy tissues and a half-eaten cheese sandwich.
I mean, okay, I should probably let you out more often, but are you happy as a vampire, Cato?
I mean, it was not the life I would have chosen for myself. I was regal, majestic, a king of the air. Many a bird looked upon me as its master. And now look at me, as he just holds out one wing and two feathers just flutter off into the air and just carried off behind the cart. I am more of a...
Oh, God.
Paperweight.
I feel really bad.
I ask Kato, why didn't you just turn into a bat?
Kato gives you panoramic shit eye and is like, Velsia, your friend is attempting humor again.
He's your friend too, Kato?
He is not my friend. He is merely a social experiment that I tolerate.
He doesn't mean that, Hannah.
What are you talking about, Kato? What them words mean?
Kato looks at you, just turns his crow head to one side, Hanash, and is like, ah, words of more than one syllable. He is learning.
Eat any good books lately? We're stopped. We're in a safe place now, right?
No, you're moving.
I mean, we're still moving.
Okay. Okay. I'm like, well, when we stop, we'll find some juicy, blood-filled treats. We'll have a chat.
God, give me one of those little robins. Oh God, I could pump a robin right now. Could we?
That's what we were apologizing for at the top of the episode. It's good to know when it lines up.
What?
What
to all the ornithologists?
Apology, the RSPB.
God, I could pump a robin right now.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. You can pump a robin if you want. You can milk a robin.
I don't know where I need to send you, but I need to send you somewhere. I don't know who can help us, but there's got to be some kind of government helpline that can help us out.
Do you have any idea how small the cloaca is on a robin? It is tiny.
Sounds like you do.
Yes. Yes.
How many mil are we talking?
Not even mil. It's in picometers. Oh. It's just a tiny, 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 tiny. You can get 3 atoms out of a robin's cloaca at any time. Anyway, we are going off topic, people. Basically, Belsia, you are petting Kato as you just stroke him gently, more and more of his feathers just coming off as you stroke him. He's looking more and more sickly by the minute. He's going to need feeding, otherwise he's going to waste away into a flying skeleton. He pauses at one point, turns his head into the darkness behind the cart and looks for a while, his crow head turned on one side, as he looks back at you, Belsia, and says, I do have some concerns.
Look, I mean, I don't know much about cloacas, but... I don't know if you cleaned it, get some wet tissue, or... What is it?
I'm afraid I'm going to have to stop you there. I was not referring to my now non-functional orifice. I am an undead bird. I was talking about the 2 individuals on horseback who appear to be following us. As he turns his head back behind you, you look out into the night and you see, maybe 100 meters back, 2 horsemen keeping distance with you.
Tatty, we're being followed.
I'm awake, and don't call me daddy. I'm going to turn around and see how many horses, how many men I can see, how worried I should be.
Okay. How good's your night vision?
I have 60 feet dark vision.
Okay. 60 feet is only 20 meters. So, 18.2 meters, according to Google. So, they're some way back. I'm going to make me an investigation check with disadvantage, please, Tatty. Actually, just make it normally because everyone else will help you. Just roll 1 dice.
Okay. That is a 25.
Woo! Fuck me. As you look back into the darkness, your eyes slowly adjusting, the shapes form up into two horsemen. And as you feel the ice running in your veins and just butterflies in your stomach, you realize once again you're looking back at two blonde-haired individuals on horseback with black cloaks, keeping distance behind you.
Ugh, it's the Hitler Youth again.
Anyone else we can alienate? Excellent. Good. We're going to have to apologize to the fascists.
Never thought we'd have to apologize to the fascists. Put them on the list with Russia and Paul and Oates.
Absolutely. Yep. Yes, unfortunately, due to your noisy exit out of the Wayne Gate of Nicodranas, you drew attention to the elves, who are now keeping lockstep behind you some way back, but are just holding distance watching at this point. You're aware of them. They're aware of you. And that's where we're going to take a break.
See you shortly.
See you shortly. Well, hey there, fellow nerds and ne'er-do-wells. That's about all we're going to achieve for this week's episode. Seeing as you made it this far, why not consider hitting that subscribe button and never miss another episode again? Better yet, if you're feeling up for it, why not give us a 5-star review on whatever podcasting platform you are on? All of your reviews and recommendations really help spread the word of all of this crazy fantasy fucknuggetry, and they really do mean the world to us. So drop us a review, and you never know, we might be reading it out on next week's episode. If you fancy chatting to us about anything you've heard across the course of this episode, your best bet is to find us on the app formerly known as Twitter, now X. You can find us at Adventurers, A-N-O, number one. And you can also find us on Instagram and Facebook, etc., etc., etc. Right, that just leaves time to say a massive goodbye from Chris, Raggy, Matt, and myself. We'll see you back here next week for more fun-packed fantasy fucknuggetry. Adventurers out.